May it please the court, I'm Eugene Scalia, representing the appellant, Rubber Manufacturers Association. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Congress has enacted a statute explicitly addressing the subject of disclosure of so-called early warning data, or EWR data, under the TREAD Act of 2000. And the question before the court is the meaning of that provision. The government has devoted almost the entirety of its brief to explicating the standards for determining whether a statute is an Exemption 3 statute under FOIA, and gives essentially no attention to what this provision means. I'd like to begin this morning by focusing on the TREAD Act, on the meaning of this provision, the purpose of the provision, and turn then to the Exemption 3 standards, because I think it's evident once the meaning of this provision is identified, it's plain as well that it does, in fact, qualify.
Can you give me – I had some difficulty trying to figure out the procedural posture of this case. Is this a challenge to a rulemaking, a failure to promulgate a rule, or is it a standalone declaratory judgment? How does the Exemption 3 issue even come before the court?
Your Honor, it is before the court in two ways. First of all, yes, there was a rulemaking. In that rulemaking, the agency undertook to identify FOIA exemptions that would apply. It identified Exemption 4, Exemption 6. RMA, my client, had advocated as well that Exemption 3 was applicable here. That was rejected. And when Public Citizen brought a challenge to the scope of the Exemption 4 exemption, RMA challenged the lack of the Exemption 3 exemption. It was not reasonable for the agency to exclude identification of this as an Exemption 3 statute. But in addition, Your Honor, RMA members have submitted the required data. This is early, so-called early warning data, which is gathered to identify warning of possible defects in vehicles. All the categories of information here are here because they could involve defects, but it's early. It could be wrong, could be prejudicial. So RMA members have sought confidentiality under Exemption 3. It's been denied, and so suit was brought as well to enjoin disclosure of that data as to which RMA members had sought
is
exemption.
Is both a rulemaking challenge and a reverse FOIA case? Is
that essentially, that's right. So the data, as I'm saying, Your Honor, it's early data. It could be wrong. It could be highly prejudicial to the members, quite in the way that the Supreme Court was dealing with in the GTE Sylvania case, where the Consumer Product Safety Commission was gathering a lot of data, some of which could suggest a defect, and manufacturers were concerned about the release of that data into the public, particularly if it was inaccurate. So here, the statute itself, for example, says that manufacturers have to report when a death is alleged to have resulted from a defect in their product. There may be no defect. The product may not have caused it. In fact, it may not have been their product that was on the car, and that happens at times, where it turns out that the initial allegation that the product was involved is itself a faulty allegation. So to address this problem, Congress enacted a special provision to constrain disclosure of the early warning data. The proper reading of that provision, we submit, is that unless findings are made pursuant to 30167B, which is a section that preexisted in the Safety Act, unless those findings are made, this data shall not be released. In essence, a compromise was struck. NHTSA, the agency, was able to obtain a much broader set of earlier data than it otherwise would have had to enhance its ability to sift through the data and find a problem. In exchange, the manufacturer is now required to submit this potentially inaccurate, prejudicial data, were assured confidentiality unless the Secretary made certain very specific findings that, again, were set out in that pre-existing section and are reiterated in this new section in the non-disclosure provision of the TREAD Act. To read this as the exclusive means of releasing this data, that is under 30167B, is the best reading of the statute. It is the reading that gives effect to the language of the statute. It's the reading that gives effect to Congress's purpose in specially calling this data out for non-disclosure. And indeed, it's the only reason that gives effect to this provision at all. The Secretary's reading, as best I can fathom it, and it has shifted, is that data shall be released pursuant to 30167B, if it shall be released pursuant to 30167B. We didn't need Congress to tell us that in the new section. It was already there in the old section. Their reading renders this a nullity.
What about the argument, it's just closes the loop with respect to an exclusio unis reading of B. That is, the argument that B doesn't say you can't disclose under these circumstances, it says you shall. Our own cases say sometimes we read that as expressio unis, sometimes we don't, and this closes the loop. This makes clear that it cannot be disclosed with respect to the mandatory disclosure unless the requirements are met.
Judge Garland, that is an interpretation put forward in this proceeding by public citizen. I don't believe the government has advocated that interpretation.
But you're telling us not to read, give them any Chevron deference anyway, so
that's
we've got to figure out what it means.
It's chimerical for a number of reasons, Your Honor. First of all, to say it shall be released if it assists is to say if it assists, it shall be released. There is mandatory disclosure if it accomplishes a certain end. There was no discretionary disclosure to begin with, even before this provision was put in. Secondly, nobody's identified a problem with 30167B. What was the problem to be corrected? Congress specifically went out of its way to address disclosure of this data. It had a concern. It wanted to constrain disclosure. What was the concern? Nobody has said, under pre-existing 30167B, we have this problem. We really need to fix it. Here's what it was. I honestly don't know what the hypothetical set of data is that incidentally was being thrown in. Again, their theory was there was discretionary disclosure going on under 30167B. But 30167B is mandatory disclosure.
Let me ask this, just the second possible argument that I guess the district court mentioned about it clarifying, et cetera. So I guess, put best, that argument would be the TREAD Act is a new statute. When it comes before Congress, it sort of stands by itself. Yes, a really diligent member of Congress might go back and find that there are a bunch of other sections which are also relevant. But if you wanted to make absolutely clear to the people who are actually voting on this thing without requiring them to look any further, you would put in a, remember there's a non-disclosure provision here and here it is. So that while it may be somewhat redundant, it does emphasize, clarify, and draw attention to a non-disclosure provision in another section.
What I would say, first of all, is I'm not familiar with the theory, and forgive me if there are cases finding this, where language was put in a statute not for the benefit of the people who would be applying it, but instead just as an education mechanism for the members of Congress who might be reading it at the time of enactment. The theory that this is an operator's manual for 30167B is nonsensical. If I'm a government agent attempting to apply 30167B, there it is, right in front of me. The last thing I would need to do is go page up to a prior section to find out what the 30167B criteria are. That is what that argument distills to. But here's the final and I think most important point. Again, it is indisputable. Congress wanted to constrain disclosure of this data. Nobody has shown that there was a problem with disclosure under 30167B. In fact, the Secretary said in the rulemaking that historically 30167B has not been used to disclose information to the public. 30167B wasn't on the radar. That's Joint Appendix 253. What was on the radar was FOIA. FOIA is the elephant in the room when it comes to the disclosure of information in the government's hands, and particularly, I would suggest, information in the hands of NHTSA. NHTSA in 2006 had more than 200 FOIA requests. At the time this bill was enacted, there was, unsurprisingly to this panel, I suspect, NHTSA public citizen FOIA litigation in this court. And Your Honors, if what you do is constrain discretion, disclosure under 30167B, but do nothing at all about disclosure under FOIA, you have not provided the confidentiality that's at issue.
But disclosure is different, isn't it? What do you mean? Under 30167B, what is the nature of the disclosure? We know what FOIA, in FOIA it's to an individual or a company that makes a request. It's not to the world, and that person could do whatever they want with the stuff. But under this statute, how is something disclosed?
For example, it could be published in the Federal Register. One of the sections mentioned here provides for publication in the Federal Register. Another instance would be releasing through a press release or placing on a website if, for example, NHTSA has decided to bring an action against a manufacturer for a defect.
30167A lists four methods of disclosure that are covered under B. Two other officers and employees carrying out this chapter. Now, that doesn't affect FOIA in the least, does it?
No.
All right. When relevant to a proceeding under this chapter, is FOIA implicated in that situation?
Not directly, no. In none of these, I think.
To the public, if the confidentiality of the information is preserved, that avoids your problem, right?
It's potentially, potentially FOIA.
So it's under 4, to the public, when the secretary decides that disclosure is necessary to carry out 30101. What is 30101?
That's the first section in this chapter, which sets forth in general terms the statute's purpose to further highway safety. Your Honor, all of these subsections are generally applicable. They are not applicable solely to when information is disclosed under the mandatory disclosure provision. And
these are I was going to ask you about that. These are, in your view, applicable including to a FOIA request, right? Or not?
I don't believe they necessarily would be applicable to a FOIA request.
Well, what
if there were other disclosure in other circumstances pursuant to the mandatory provision at B or otherwise,
right.
These would kick in.
So neither side seems to be discussing what A means, and I'm a little confused exactly what it means. You could read it as saying information obtained under this chapter related to a confidential matter under the Trade Secrets Act, right? May be disclosed only in the following ways. Now, you don't think that applies to a FOIA request? I mean, one way to read this, I thought, was that if it's covered by the Trade Secret Act, it may be disclosed only with the necessary finding in 4, even with respect to a FOIA request. I take it nobody's reading it that way?
I don't think it's been read that way, Your Honor.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, it does provide the protection from prosecution under 18 U.S.C. 1905 that might be relevant to a FOIA request because it provides the authorization.
Mm-hmm.
But I read this as governing disclosure under B or otherwise, though I don't think anybody's advocated that it necessarily applies in the FOIA
so,
context.
But when you say or otherwise, you don't mean FOIA.
I'm not including FOIA in that. I've not read in that manner.
Can I ask you one more small question about the statute? The TREAD Act, it says none of the information, and we've been describing these as being essentially, or you've been describing them as being parallel or redundant. That one says shall be disclosed unless the Secretary determines that it will assist. In B, it says the Secretary determines it will assist or that is required to be disclosed under 30118A. There's an additional clause there. Does it make any difference?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. 30118A is mandatory disclosure of a different kind. Clearly, it would assist to respect Congress's mandatory disclosure injunction. I'd like to speak for a moment about the context of this enactment. As I've said, FOIA was the elephant in the room when it came to the disclosure of this data. There was controversy that existed over the disclosure of this data. We've reported in our brief the exchange that occurred in the House between Representatives Markey and Tozan, the majority member and ranking member, respectively, of the committee that reported this out, the floor leaders, co-sponsors of the bill, which made crystal clear the new data was early data, it would be confidential, that wouldn't affect the data that's currently submitted under existing laws. Three times they distinguished between the new data, early and confidential, and the older data, which would continue to be released. The next day, Senator McCain, lead sponsor in the Senate, floor manager in the Senate, chair of the relevant committee, inserted into the record that very exchange. And this is cited in, I believe, the Public Citizen's Brief. It's 146 Congressional Record S-10273. And he says, quote, specifically, concerns have been raised that the bill would inhibit the release of information collected by Department of Transportation to the public, end quote.
When was the last time we relied on a colloquy on the floor? Even if we thought legislative history did make a difference, that particular kind of legislative history.
I don't know the last time. I can tell you, Your Honor, that in the GTE Sylvania case, the Supreme Court relied on floor statements. It relied on statements in the committee hearings. Certainly, if there is ambiguity,
there were committee hearings. There was a committee report in that case. Right?
Yes, there was, Your Honor, but it didn't address this particular provision. But to give more context to that statement, the House voted October 10th, the Senate voted October 11th. On the morning of October 11th, Public Citizen issued a press release, which is cited in the Joint Appendix at pages 28 and 91. And in that press release, it said, stop the House bill, vote the Senate bill. we're going to visit every individual senator to stop the House bill.
You don't think that a statement by public citizen is even more important than a colloquy on the floor, do you?
Here's why it's notable, Your Honor. Here's why it's notable. Because it confirms what we know from the existence of FOIA litigation and from the pure manner of operation of the statute, which is that this information would be sought under FOIA. And given that it would be sought under FOIA, it would have been meaningless to protect it under 30167B from heavens knows what, and nonetheless leave it completely free and open to disclosure under FOIA when the leading FOIA litigant is publicly saying, we want it under FOIA. They're a sophisticated litigant. They understood the statute. They recognized it to be an Exemption 3 statute.
But there's a timing difference, though, isn't there? Under the statute, the material could, or the information could be released almost upon receipt. But FOIA necessarily has built into it a lag time. Does that matter?
I don't think
you have to have the request, and then it has to be, go through whatever bureaucratic maneuvers are necessary to validate it and then release the information.
Your Honor, what the government has said is that the mandatory provision 30167B historically has not even been used. So in terms of the public's ability to get it, certainly FOIA is going to be a more reliable mechanism, one in their own hands, that they could implement, and it was going to be used. In fact, it was being said it would be used at the very time the confidentiality issue was being discussed. 30167 had not been used.
If it's confidential information, you would still be protected by the protections of Exemption 4, right? This would have to come under Exemption 4.
Well, you would have the protections of the Trade Secret Act.
Right.
You would have the protections that exist in 30167A, as we construe it.
Well,
you're saying
that's what I was asking you before.
Yes.
So assume you're wrong about this, okay? I know that's going to be hard.
Hypothetically, for a moment, I will.
Hypothetically, and only for the moment. Assume that actually this doesn't constrain FOIA. The TRED Act part doesn't constrain FOIA. Then if it were confidential information, would be covered by Exemption 4, and there would be all the limitations on disclosure of confidential information, right?
Your Honor, to the extent it's confidential business information,
right,
and triggers the Exemption 4 concerns. But remember, a principal concern here was the prejudice, the unreliability of the data. That was the main concern, not that it was confidential business information per se. It was a similar concern as in the GTE Sylvania case. So you could certainly conceivably have a pool of data, indeed you do, that is not judged by the agency to be Exemption 4 protected, but that would be withheld under this provision.
What if somebody filed a FOIA request with respect to this EWR data that was submitted 10 years ago? 10 years ago, Goodyear or B.F. Goodrich or what, submitted this EWR data, and we're now doing an investigation, and we don't have to give you a reason why we want it under FOIA.
It wouldn't be available, Your Honor, but I don't know why there would be particularly great interest
But 10 years from now, maybe there wouldn't be a great interest, but none of the arguments that you make really would apply, would they, for keeping the information secret?
I don't know that Congress thought that particular problem through, but I suspect that if it had, it would have concluded the prejudice arises from release in the near time, and that is coextensive with the interest, which is to gather data relatively current, although it's certainly conceivable you would have a vehicle on the road for 10 years, Your Honor. And in that respect, the 10 years could be a period of time in which you'd still want to have confidentiality. If I could, I'd like to...
Maybe I haven't framed this up right, but in 2017, somebody files a FOIA request for the information, this EWR data that was submitted in 2007. Now, what's the argument for saying that shouldn't be disclosed?
The argument would be that the statute is a global protection of the confidentiality of the data, and data submitted in 2007 regarding, for example, a 2006 vehicle is still data that could be misleading and prejudicial about vehicles on the road 11 years later. People have vehicles on the road that long. I'd like to save the remainder of my time, and I'm prepared on rebuttal to address specifically the scope of the data sought and the discretion, which is very limited, vested in the Secretary. But the cases before this Court make clear that, in both respects, this is a narrower pool of data than in virtually all the cases cited. And to adopt public citizens and the government's construction of Exemption 3, including its prohibition on legislative history, would be inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent and inconsistent with many of this Court's decisions. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Scott Nelson, representing the appellee Public Citizen in this action. I'd like to address a couple of other elephants in the room, the first of which is the language of the statute, and the second of which is this Court's decision in Norton. The language of this statute provides that the data in question shall not be released pursuant to Section 30167B. Unless certain specific findings are made. Section 30167B then goes on to set forth an obligation of the Secretary to disclose information in certain circumstances, and it provides that this obligation is in addition to the requirements of Section 552 of Title V, that is, in addition to the requirements of FOIA. So what we have in the TRED Act is a statute that conditions disclosure under another statute that expressly states that it is over and above and separate from the disclosure obligations of FOIA. There's no way to read those two provisions together to find that Section 30166M43C, or I think I've got an extra digit in there somewhere, conditions or affects release under FOIA in any way. So that's the first elephant, and I think that the appellants never really engaged the language of the statute, either in their briefing or in their argument here today. The second is this Court's decision in Norton, which held quite specifically that in determining whether a statute is an Exemption 3 statute under FOIA, the Court looks at the explicit language of the statute and does not look to legislative history.
But doesn't opposing counsel make a good point on that Norton, what Norton really says is that it must explicitly say that it's about disclosure?
No.
I'll read you the language.
Well, I realize that
that it does say that.
It says that, yeah. But it doesn't say that it's sufficient if it does address disclosure.
No, but to the extent you're relying on Norton, all Norton says is that it has to be a disclosure statute, and Norton had nothing. The statute
one sentence of Norton said.
Well, that's all that the statute in Norton, that was the problem in Norton, right?
In Norton, you're right, the statute didn't address disclosure at all.
Right.
Norton, in turn, relied for its proposition on the Court's previous decision in Reporters Committee, which was a statute that addressed disclosure. But again, the Court said that something more was required in order to make the statute an Exemption 3 statute. It has to explicitly provide that disclosure in terms that would affect FOIA is affected. And
Let me just ask, by your argument, I take it that none of the district court's discussion about the prongs of 552B is really necessary,
Yeah, I think the district court didn't need to get into that issue.
Your argument is that this is not a statute that it specifically exempts, and therefore you don't move on to the rest of that.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm delighted that the district court, put on a belt as well as a suspender, but I really don't think that's required here. I take a much more, I think, straightforward approach to
Could
this.
Could you help me with the meaning of A, 30167A? What do you understand it to mean?
Well, first, with respect to 30167A, it doesn't apply to all material that's received under this title or this chapter, which is all material relating to defects, nor to all early warning data. It applies specifically to trade secret information. Right. So in one sense, it's actually sort of narrower than... Right.
But it does apply to anything that would be an exemption for, a subject exemption for under FOIA, right?
Yes, I think if something's subject to exemption 4 under FOIA, it also would be referred to in 30167A.
So my question was, I appreciate, this is just so I can understand the statute. Neither party seems to be thinking that it matters much to this disposition. But does it mean that if it is trade secret information and it's there's a FOIA request, that it both has to meet exemption 4 and there has to be the decision by the Secretary? That's necessary?
Well, for one thing, no one has read it that way.
I
think the very fact that we're all sort of sitting here struggling suggests that it probably doesn't meet the standard of clarity necessary to make it an exemption.
So what does it mean? So you think it's only with respect to 30167B disclosures? Or
other disclosures that the Secretary might make in his discretion public matters. And as my friend stated, you know, in the context of defect in investigations, the Secretary has occasion to make public a lot of information because, you know, defects are a matter of public interest. And when there's a defect investigation, there's notice. When a defect is found, the Secretary tries to put out the word in various ways. I'd like to also, in my time here,
Congress put these restrictions on disclosure of information. This is an obvious question. On disclosure of information requiring the Secretary to go through all these hoops and yet allow it to be freely disseminated pursuant to a FOIA request.
Well, freely disseminated pursuant to a FOIA request is in this context, I think FOIA is not so free here, unfortunately. If you go through FOIA, you wind up with arguments that much of this information is subject to various exemptions, including Exemption 4, which is a huge issue in the litigation below and in the ongoing rulemaking proceedings about the scope. Whereas 30167B, if the Secretary makes those determinations, he's not subject to FOIA exemptions. He's required to put that information out to the public.
The question is if he cannot make the or she cannot make the determination. Positively says I can't make the determination.
Right. In that case, what this provision in the TRED Act does is remove any possible doubt that perhaps the Secretary might, under 30167B, have discretion to include in the disclosure things as to which she had not made the findings that are referred to in that section. Remember, 30167B authorizes disclosures. It doesn't say, and no more than
this
than
is the closing of the expressio unis argument? Is that all there is to this?
Well, as was pointed out, there is also one difference in the criteria, which is that the TRED Act provision does not make mention of Section 30118A, which is the provision that provides in publication in the Federal Register of the pendency, I think, of a defect investigation. Information has to be
included. Your opponent says that if it must be disclosed, that obviously will assist the Secretary in carrying out her obligations. So,
well, I think that would be one argument. Another possible argument might be that the wording of that language suggests that perhaps that's not so with respect to that category of information. I mean, the issue isn't before us. I'm just saying that is one additional difference. I'd like to say one other thing, though, on the question of whether this makes the statute superfluous. This court recently had occasion to say, in a case unfortunately not cited in any of the briefs, Amoco Production Company versus Watson, 410 F3rd 722, no canon of construction justifies construing the actual statutory language beyond what the terms can reasonably bear. And I think that's especially pertinent here. It's one thing to say we want to give this statute some meaning, but it's another thing to say in order to give it meaning, we're going to provide that it actually limits disclosure, not under 30167B, which is what it refers to, but rather under FOIA, which is a matter that 30167B's language actually precludes applying it to. I'd like to very briefly address the legislative history. My friend talked about all these concerns and Congress's focusing on this matter of disclosure. All that is pointed to in the legislative history is this one very obscure exchange on the floor that in itself doesn't refer to FOIA, doesn't refer to any problems if this matter, if these early warning data were disclosed under FOIA. It's really one of the smallest quantities of legislative history I think I've ever seen cited.
Counsel,
to support
can you,
legislative history.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding your position. C is talking about a discrete category of information, the new provision, the disclosure.
That's right. Correct.
Okay. Which might otherwise be disclosable under 30167B.
Correct.
Absent C. And so, no, we know with respect to that discrete category of information, unless the Secretary makes findings, it will not be disclosed.
She may not disclose it.
Right.
Under that provision.
Okay. Now, can you give me an example? You're arguing that that doesn't answer the FOIA question. What in this discrete category of information, for example, a specific example, just so I'm understanding what we're talking about, do you think would be blocked pursuant to that reading of the statute but still be subject to release under FOIA? Like what?
Yes, I'll use the example that my friend on the other side gave, the information about deaths and injuries, allegations of deaths and injuries involving a particular vehicle or piece of equipment. The Secretary in her rulemaking, which was remanded and is being redone, had provided that information was not exempt from disclosure under Exemption 4 because it's not really trade secret information, and there's a great public interest in its disclosure. That information would be subject to the prohibition in this provision on a release under 30167B. But if there were a FOIA request made for it, it would be subject to disclosure.
Well, isn't your position that anything that the Secretary is unwilling or decides won't assist cannot be mandatorily required under B, but that's just not an issue with respect to FOIA?
Right. Well,
and we start over again with respect to FOIA, is that right?
That's my position in general, and I was responding to Judge Edwards' inquiry of a specific example of how that might work.
Exactly.
But you know, the more general proposition is whatever is requested under FOIA, the Secretary would consider the FOIA request and claim exemption or disclose without regard at all to this provision in the TRED Act, M4C. I'm getting confused on the digits again.
You call 30167B.
30166 and 30167.
Yeah, I'll accept that, Your Honor.
I have a couple questions for you, Mr. Nielsen, before you sit down. If this statute had said the following data shall be disclosed, except that this sort of data shall not be disclosed, if that's all it said, if the EWR data shall not be disclosed, you would agree that that would be exempt, would it not?
Yes, I think I probably would. I mean, I'd have to look at the statute, but the case law on Exemption 3 generally doesn't require, as you know, that the statute refer to FOIA.
Exactly.
So if there's a global, thou shalt not disclose.
It does
that,
not have to.
Right.
Aren't you reading, therefore, too much into the pursuant to? I mean, if the only way for the Secretary to disclose information is in compliance with a provision of the statute, then regardless whether the disclosure statute provision refers to that or not, you read into it a pursuant to.
Well, I'm not sure that's actually correct, Your Honor, because, you know, absent statutes, I'm not sure that one would say that there's some general prohibition on cabinet secretaries releasing information.
If there's one provision that governs disclosure and another provision that talks about what information can be disclosed. They don't have to cross-reference each other.
Well, that might be true in general, but in this case, 30167B is not just a provision that talks about disclosure. It's sort of an unusual provision. It's a provision that says, under these circumstances, you must disclose. And this goes beyond FOIA. You don't have to be asked for it. If you make this determination, you must disclose.
And C says that unless you make this determination, you must not disclose.
Pursuant to that section. That's correct.
You agree that C is that you cannot get anywhere by saying, well, C didn't say you can't, it didn't mention the Freedom of Information Act, because Exemption 3 does not require that it mention the Freedom of Information
Act. I agree that Exemption 3 does not require that it mention the Freedom of Information Act, but I would submit that when it does mention some particular statutory authority and when the language by its terms applies and refers only to disclosure under that statutory authority, that is not an explicit authorization to limit disclosure under FOIA, and Exemption 3, as this Court and the Supreme Court have construed it, requires a specific, i.e., express prohibition on disclosure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Jane Lyons. I'm here on behalf of the Secretary of Transportation, Mary Peters. As the Court has already covered a fair amount of ground, I'll just jump and say that I think Mr. Nelson is correct. The fact that we're all struggling so much makes it clear that the TRED Act is not an explicit nondisclosure statute evidencing a congressional determination that certain materials ought to be kept confidential. The question is, what does it mean? And I think maybe the place to start with figuring that out, even though I'm going third, is to recognize that the TRED Act opened up a new area for the Secretary to gather information. The information that has the label early warning reporting data is best thought of maybe as a matrix of data. It's a lot of data points. At the time it is submitted, nobody knows what it might ultimately come to or mean. And what the idea is for the secretary, or delegated down to NHTSA, to be able to do is to look through all of that data and try to spot trends in the data which are suggestive of a problem with a vehicle or a component. Now, the secretary isn't required to use this data in isolation. The secretary, or NHTSA more accurately, is permitted to use this EWR data, or parts of it, parts of the matrix, along with other information that it gathers. And at some point, it is possible that there is then an investigation, which may or may not culminate in a recall. And the purpose of the section, 30166M4C, is just to make clear that if some segment of EWR data ultimately becomes part of the defect investigation that is subject to disclosure under 30167B, then the submitter of the data, the EWR data, couldn't object to the release of it under 30167B simply because it came into the agency through a different and new route. And that, I think, is the best way to understand the section. It just feeds this new data into the old disclosure provision. And unless you read the pursuant to 30167B language into the provision, then it might be a very different statute. But it says none of the information shall be disclosed pursuant to 30167B. Now, I recognize that the TRED Act provision does not contain the same language or the last sentence of 30167B, which makes it expressly clear that the disclosure provision here is in addition to that required under the FOIA. But I think that's how the information is best understood. It's important to recognize that just because Congress gave it the label EWR data doesn't make it a particularly well-defined set of things. If it would help the court, I can tell you that it is the position of the Secretary that, in general, the information regarding death, injury, and property claims is not covered by Exemption 4. And we're talking about this in the Exemption 3 context because that's the issue presently before the court. But it's, as Judge Garland's questions have outlined, there are requests for confidentiality for this information that are routinely dealt with administratively by the agency.
Some of the information is covered and some is not?
That's correct, Your Honor. And the rulemaking that has been referenced has to do with the Secretary's determination having decided. Now, remember, the Secretary got to define the universe of data that it would collect. The law has this other category, and the Secretary had a lot of discretion to determine what other data would be collected under the early warning program. That's part of the reason why it's very hard for this court to conclude, I think, that Congress evidenced the need for confidentiality here, and the statute has to do that for it to be an Exemption 3. Getting back to your question, which I've now forgotten.
Well, the last question I think you answered, which was some of the information may be covered by Exemption 4, some may not. Is that right?
That's correct. And the rulemaking, that's what I was trying to get to. The rulemaking is attempting to give some parameters for what the Secretary considers to be covered by Exemption 4 and which it does not. And I was just trying to give an example of the ones the Secretary has determined are not covered. I can also tell the court that the administrator of NHTSA signed the new final rule last week, and we expect it to be published this week in the Federal Register.
It's nothing like scheduling an oral argument.
It doesn't really matter.
The agency is moving.
Interestingly, Your Honor, were I to lose this case, the rest of that rulemaking would be irrelevant. So they've moved ahead, though, and that's the current state
of play. It's putting a lot of pressure on you, isn't it?
No, not really. It's not at all. Not at all.
And what do you understand the meaning of A to B, 30167A?
30167A is a provision that allows limited disclosures for information that would qualify under the Trade Secret Act. It's really not something that the agency deals with separately with FOIA. It's an element, I would think, of the Exemption 4 analysis that might apply trade secret information following in there, but it's not something that really concerns the interplay between the FOIA and the TRED Act.
Is that a taking when the Secretary releases trade secret information?
Is it a taking?
Just adding another wrinkle to the case.
Boy, that just got complicated.
Just say you blanked out on the question.
Is that a good answer?
Yeah.
If you're giving me that direction, Judge Edwards, I certainly respect it.
See Monsanto versus Ruckelson.
And did you see any difference between the meaning of the fact that B has an additional clause and A and 30166 doesn't? Does this make any difference? The clause that says, or that is required to be disclosed under Section 30118A, which is not present in 30166.
I recognize that, Your Honor, but I think it, I think. Well, 30118 is referenced at the end of M4C.
Yeah, it's referenced, but only in the same way that the previous clause is in 30167B. That is, 30167B has almost the identical clause from 30166 and then tacks on where that is required.
Right, but because it does reference 30118 and 30118 is a subsection of it, I don't attach any great significance to that difference.
So that's an example of congressional language that doesn't mean anything.
It's not that it doesn't mean anything. It's just a different verbiage of, I think, much the same thought. Different drafters, maybe the...
No, the same drafter, because it's in B, right? Both clauses are in B. You're telling me that the second clause in B doesn't add anything to the first clause. That is, the language it says, the Secretary decides will assist in carrying out sections 30117B and 30118-30121. You're saying that that is the same as the next part that says, or that is required to be disclosed under 30118.
Right, that's not actually what I meant, and I'm sorry if I was unclear. What I meant to suggest is that the provision in 30166M4C references the 30118, and that it doesn't go on in reference in there, subsection A. That's all I was addressing in my answer before.
Is your point that, subsection C and 167B are really just mirror images of each other? One says you can't disclose it unless you find X. The other says you shall disclose it if you find X.
I read it as...
It's not. That's what these sections say, right? Don't disclose any of the information unless you determine it will assist you in carrying out the statute. The other says disclose all the information if you decide that it will assist you in carrying out the statute.
I don't think that reading is correct, Judge Randolph, precisely because it reads out the none of the information collected can be disclosed pursuant to 30167B. I might agree with you if those words were not in here, but they are.
But that part, I have trouble understanding that part. You can't disclose. If you disclosed it under B, right, if your reading is correct, if you disclosed it under B, you would have had to find that it will assist in carrying out the sections of the statute.
That's correct.
Right.
All it is intended, I believe.
Well, if you find that, then you've necessarily made a determination under C.
It is the same determination.
Right.
So what I think it is intended to include, that if the Secretary makes that finding, which would normally be in the context of considering the Safety Act notice and recall provisions, it simply is meant to remove any objection to disclosure if the data came in through the early warning reporting program as opposed to other avenues of information collection that the agency uses. My time is about to run out here. If there are no further questions, I would ask on behalf of Secretary Peters that the court affirm the judgment below and find that the TRED Act's disclosure provision is not covered by Exemption 3 of the FOIA. Thank you.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. We believe that this case can be decided for RMA applying ordinary canons of construction, even without reliance on legislative history. Public Citizen has referred to an earlier case of this court. I refer the court to the Supreme Court's decision last year in Atlantic Research Corp, cited in our brief, where the court said, quote, "Our hesitancy to construe statutes to render language superfluous does not require us to avoid surplusage at all costs. It is appropriate to tolerate a degree of surplusage rather than adopt a textually dubious construction that threatens to render the entire provision a nullity." If I understand the argument correctly, the government is acknowledging that this provision doesn't do anything. In the government's word, it feeds back into something that was already there. That reads it out. And canons of construction tell us we shouldn't do that. In terms of legislative history, there was only a House report. There wasn't a conference report. There was a Senate report, but it was on a different bill. It wasn't just in the House. It also was in the Senate that the lead sponsor, the floor manager, incorporated by reference the colloquy in the House, all of them making clear the newer data would be confidential, the older data would not.
If this statute had read, "The Secretary shall disclose this EWR data if the Secretary determines it will assist in carrying out the Act," would you say that's a non-disclosure provision?
I don't think it is anywhere to the degree of this. This begins, none of the information shall be disclosed. So it is a hard non-disclosure, what this court has called a 3B2 non-disclosure direction, much firmer.
But it has exactly the same effect as the disclosure provision, B. Because that says the Secretary shall disclose if it will assist in carrying out the Act. This one says the Secretary shall not disclose unless it will assist in carrying out the Act. What is the difference between those two provisions?
There's no difference, Your Honor. It's a nullity.
That doesn't make it a nullity, because this was written in conjunction with an addition to the statute, right?
Yes, but Your Honor,
So one way to look at this, I just want you to understand my question. One way to look at this is to say, we're clarifying this. You want to make it very clear, this is a new provision in the statute, and with respect to this kind of data, this we mean to say. Now, it may be the same as what was already there, but they're making it precisely clear.
But, Your Honor, there was no uncertainty. There was nothing to be clarified. There was no controversy over 30167B. The Secretary has said it hadn't historically been used, and it was clear under the existing statute 30167B would have covered it in any event. Public Citizen has failed to identify any of this gray area information.
This reminds me of a controversy that raged in the early part of the 20th century over the supposed distinction between prohibitory injunctions and mandatory injunctions. And after a while, most of the scholarship came to the conclusion there really was no difference whether if you're requiring something versus prohibiting. There's no mandatory injunction that can't be written in prohibitory terms. And so what we have here is we have a prohibitory injunction under C and then a mandatory injunction under B.
There's
no difference.
That's right. We have a theoretical dispute over a disclosure provision never used. Meanwhile, we have FOIA under which this kind of information is actively sought. Judge Randolph, in response to you, nobody has said FOIA wasn't enough. FOIA wasn't going to give me what I needed. And it's clear that it was going to have been sought under FOIA. Final point, I would direct the court again to its decision in the Public Citizen FAA case, where disclosure under FOIA was prevented. The statute did not address disclosure under the APA. Public Citizen claimed, well, we can get it under the APA notice and comment disclosure requirements. And this court said, oh, come on. The intent was to prohibit disclosure, and we're going to effectuate that, even though there's no reference to FOIA, or rather APA. And incidentally, it's significant that this statute does not refer to FOIA. The new statute did not. The old one did. So the absence of a recognition of FOIA disclosure for this data, when it existed in the older provision, and that part of the older provision is not referred to, is quite significant. In sum, Your Honors, Congress enacted this law with a purpose. The purpose was to limit disclosure. You have not been proffered an interpretation that would meaningfully in any way constrain disclosure other than the interpretation that's been put forward by the Rubber Manufacturers Association. And for that reason, we believe the district court's decision should be reversed.
Thank you.